welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. I have a return guest. I believe this is a three-peat. I think that's a sport thing. Guy English. Guy, thanks for joining me again.
It's always a blast. I was happy. Three things I like about this show. A, just the idea of it. Random Trek is... That's such a minefield of potential fun and disaster.
It's true.
B, talking to you, which I've said before.
Huh.
But C is interesting new guests that I haven't heard from before. So I apologize to people who are disappointed to hear from me again. But I'm super excited. So hopefully that balances it out.
Well, thank you. Somebody just the other day very nicely on Twitter complimented me on all of the various guests I have on. So whoever that was, thank you. I try to get a wide variety, but I also like returning guests because you have a rapport. And Guy, you're always welcome.
Thank you.
When last you were on, we had another Deep Space Nine episode. Spoiler alert, this is maybe the earliest I've told people what episode we're talking about, although everybody knows. Take Me Out to the Hollow Suite, Season 7, Episode 4, from Deep Space Nine. Now, I think I am not wrong in saying Deep Space Nine is your favorite Star Trek series. Is that correct, Guy?
Yeah, we've covered it before. So I think if TOS, basically, just because it started out all, didn't age so well.
Mm.
But, you know, like, everything we like about Star Trek is, like, it's nascent. It's in its nascent form there. But I think DS9 is, you know, the strongest all-around series.
I think that's right. I mean, I've been watching a bunch of random episodes of Star Trek, so it gives me, I was going to say it gives me a new perspective, but really my entire life I've been watching a bunch of random episodes of Star Trek because, as I try to explain to the younger people who listen to this podcast, there was a time when you could not just watch any episode of Star Trek anytime you wanted. You had to wait for it to show up on the TV or buy ridiculously expensive VHS tapes.
Yeah. Like, for us, Star Trek is inherently random.
That's right.
Like, it's just what happens to be on at what time. That's what you watch, and you damn well like it.
And I still do that a little bit more. My wife, more so than I, she will come across, like, a random TNG episode on the BBC, because mm-hmm. BBC America, because they are playing them. They're playing marathons. Although they've been playing Voyager marathons. And so she'll just watch it. And I say, you know, we have this... We have every season of The Next Generation on Blu-ray, and it would look much better if you want to watch this episode on Blu-ray. And she's like, well, then I have to take the disc out and figure out how to switch it, and I just don't want to do any of that.
Yeah, there is a certain joy just to like the randomness, haphazardness of it.
It is true. The serendipity of just watching, you know, whatever episode of TNG might show up on your TV screen.
I will say, wait, there's one other thing I want to thank you and your guest for is... you've turned me on to Voyager a bit more.
Ah, let's talk about that.
Which is still not a big fan. but thanks to your, frankly, your diversity of guests, I've heard from a lot more women who...
Yes.
You know, everybody loves Janeway. And I checked out of that series while it was airing. It was pretty weak. But, I mean, they were all weak in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
But something about it just turned me off. And I checked out for sure when they brought on Seven of Nine,
mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, yes, that's a sex bomb, lady, and now you're just insulting me, and so screw you. Like, I've rejected it entirely. Since then, I've gone back and watched the entire thing, you know, largely in part because of the, you know, what you guys have said, listening to the episode of this show, and I've enjoyed it a lot more. And in fact, Janeway and Seven of Nine are both amazing characters.
They are some of, and I've said this before, some of the best Star Trek characters, period, I think. And I've had the same reaction as you with Seven of Nine, particularly because, you know, the uniform, the little outfit they put her in, which isn't really little, but it's very tight. you think, all right, please, don't pander to me. But she, I believe, the writers and Jerry Ryan... elevated the character from her costume and made her very interesting and a good spin on the whole kind of Spock Data archetype that we know of and love in Star Trek. So let's pivot now from Voyager, because we did not watch, as I already said, a Voyager episode. Nay, we watched a Deep Space Nine episode. In fact, we watched an episode that I have seen many times, and I always kind of dread watching it only because I don't really like baseball. And I think of it as that baseball one, but, and of course it is that baseball one, but it's also really just a great kind of character study of the different characters.
So I am also not a baseball fan. Well, I've become more of a fan now. I guess in my old age, I'm just chilling out and learning to enjoy things for what they
just
are.
Just sit back and watch a boring game of baseball.
Yeah. I thought you said a Borg game of baseball, and like, I would probably watch that too. Yeah.
That's, I'm sure, a Voyager episode. They play the Borg probably, game of baseball.
Yeah, yeah, with their hollow Borgs. That's anyway, I'm getting distracted. I'm not a big fan of baseball, but I love this episode so much, not just because of the episode, which you're dead on saying it's a character study, but because it is a bit of a palate cleanser and a real dark soup of season 6 and 7 kind of thing.
Yeah, season 6 and 7 get pretty grim in Deep Space Nine, and this is very much kind of a bottle episode, in that it doesn't affect much of the rest of the what's going on. It doesn't really affect anything else in this season. And it was probably, I watched it with my wife and I said, what did you think of it? And she said, that seemed like a cheap episode to film.
Yeah.
So they probably saved some money on it as well for the other, because they were having, you know, season 7 has some big budget episodes with lots of ships and stuff.
Yeah. This feels like they took the afternoon off and just filmed it in one day, which was awesome. Don't get me wrong, but yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's always fun to see Star Trek characters in kind of contemporary settings. So they're on the baseball field. The spectators aren't wearing kind of futuristic Federation garb. They're just wearing, you know, like 90s casual wear, which I think was a good choice on the people who shot this. And that's why I like, you know, to once again go on a tangent, Star Trek IV is so much fun because Star Trek characters that we know and love are in the same time that we are, and it's fun to see them kind of trying to adapt to it and, you know, not knowing some simple things. And we get a little bit of that here because, you know, Sisko forces his entire crew to play baseball, and none of them really know anything about baseball.
Which is such a silly conceit. The holodeck lets you get away with a lot, because back in the old days, we used to have to go to a planet full of gangsters to have, like, you know,
that's true.
Have ancient Rome or what's my favorite one there? The gangster one, Piece of the Action.
Oh yes, good episode.
Yeah, Fizbin.
Yes,
yeah, I love playing Fizbin. Anyway, it's a similar conceit, right? It's like, let's take our guys and stick them in a alternate,
right? In a wacky thing that's like they would, if this was an original series episode, they would have beamed down to a planet that somehow got like Major League Baseball broadcasts somehow, and they decided to put their whole society and base it on baseball, and they would have to destroy some supercomputer by beating it in a game of baseball.
Yes, and the bullpen would be a jail, and there would be a sexy jailer.
Absolutely. Now I kind of want to see this episode of the original series. But this episode is, this conceit here is that Sisko and his classmate, Solok, who's a Vulcan, have this rivalry, and he challenges Sisko out of nowhere, really, to a game of baseball. And Sisko's like, of course, I will take up this challenge. And his crew is perplexed as to why he's doing this, but they're game until...
I bought it because Solok is there to get his ship repaired, and he's basically boasting about having been in battle for 6 months straight or something. And, like, it does set up that, like, this it is a time of war, and Solok kind of bashes him for being behind the lines, which is... I mean, the wormhole is literally right there. I don't know, but fine. Whatever.
He's safe on your precious star base station, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Oh, Solok. This episode is clearly designed for us not to like Solok.
Oh, no, he's racist. And he's got an all-Vulcan crew.
Which I don't even know how he gets away with in the Federation.
That just seems like... no, you're a racist prick, and I don't know how you... It's a time of war, so maybe they would just look the other way, but that seems like a violation of, you know, something.
Yeah, because he obviously... I think now, once I am not certain how starships are crewed, but I feel like there is this heavy hint that a captain gets to kind of pick his or her crew. And so one assumes Solak must have just said... looked at all of the recruits that he had and basically racially profiled them. Vulcans, yes, yeah. I will consider you. Everybody else, no thank you.
Yeah, and he's kicking around in a Federation ship, too. It's one of those ones with the discs and the sort of the snowmobile, like,
well, he's,
things
he's a,
on the bottom.
He's a Starfleet captain, so...
Yeah, it's not like he's on a Vulcan ship from Vulcan. He's flat-out Starfleet.
So, and he's like, I don't like visiting star bases that are run by humans because they are inefficient. To which Sisko's like, well, there's a Vulcan star base 50 light years away if you want to go there.
Yeah. Anyway, good job. Get stuffed, Solak. Scene set, you know, like, screw
that's
that
right.
guy.
Very, very quickly, they set up the, oh, this is the guy we don't like. Because, of course, we like Sisko. So we're on Sisko's side right from the bat. See? Basically.
Nice.
Thank you. Thank you. And this is, you know, you could tell there's some tension. Obviously, they know each other. That we find out that Sisko recently received the Christopher Pike Medal of Valor. I like that.
Yeah, me too.
But then, of course, Solak says, I have two.
Yeah, I don't like that. Shut up, Solak.
Nobody cares, Solak. Give me more baseball. Yeah, and then, so, spoiler alert for this episode, if you haven't listened, It seems silly that Sisko rises to the bait, but then we hear the backstory that they were, you know, cadets together, and basically Sisko lost a wrestling match to Solak, which, as I'm saying it out loud, is also silly.
Yeah. But granted, they did set that up by saying Sisko was drunk.
Yes.
And Solak seems like just an asshole that probably would beat up a drunk guy, because then he's got, like, a little bit of an excuse to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and, oh, he was drunk, so he got hurt. But he actually secretly, inside his Vulcan little heart, wants to beat up Sisko.
Yes. And this is, I like Vulcans in general, because I feel like they are, there are a couple of different ways you can play a Vulcan. So there's Spock, who's half Vulcan, so he's, you know, obviously he's dealing with his emotions and trying to suppress them because he wants to be more Vulcan than any Vulcan. So he's like the prototypical Vulcan. But even then, he still kind of second guesses himself.
Yeah. In a way that Worf is more Klingon than Klingon. Like when he hangs out with Klingons, they're like, would you just loosen up a bit?
That's please? Right. You know, we don't really like blood wine all that much. and so you can play it that way. And then, you know, or you've got someone like to go to Voyager, Tuvok, who is a kind of also one of my favorite Vulcans. He's very logical. He's very loyal, very competent. But he doesn't, and there's always this moment where there's an episode where a Vulcan has to cry, right? If you're being a Vulcan, because that's so shocking. So he does deal with his emotions. But we also know that he has a family and he cares about his kids and all that stuff, right? So we know that they're not... Vulcans aren't it's not like Vulcans don't have emotions, they just mastered them.
Yeah.
But then you have this other kind of, I think, this third bucket of Vulcans, and that is the Solak Vulcan, who is just arrogant, and you know that they just like, and racist, basically, and you know they just like to piss off everybody.
Yeah, which I think Enterprise kind of ran with.
Yes.
Interestingly, I kind of like their concept of Vulcans. And their implementation can just take a short hike out of a small airlock, basically.
But yeah, that's true. That's they kind of run with that. The Vulcans are, you know, basically think humans are a waste of time, but they're kind of using them as a screen to do their own nefarious things, and they will only dole out a little bit of information. So Vulcans are interesting. And T'Pol, you know, I give Enterprise a lot of grief, but I think T'Pol's probably one of the best characters on Enterprise.
I think so too. Yeah, when they're not making her be all sex bomb, but
yes, that's the problem. At least they never covered Seven of Nine with gel. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. That show. Anyway,
but so I like Vulcan. So he's that kind of Vulcan. There are a bunch of Vulcans in this episode. He's the only one that talks. or has a speaking role. I assume the other Vulcans can speak. We just do not hear them speak.
Yeah.
Although I did like one detail. I'm skipping all around. But so, you know, they at the big baseball game, they all have uniforms. And the Vulcans all obviously have uniforms. And on the back, they have their names written in Vulcan script, which I obviously can't read. But I just thought that was a good...
That's nice.
A nice little touch.
I didn't notice that. I was trying to make sense out of the numbers on our team's jerseys. I don't know if they mean anything. Worf had 32, I think.
Oh, I don't know if they mean anything 78. Either.
I don't know what they mean. But I thought you were going to call out the fact that when one of the Vulcans is running, he looks like a total goofball. when Jake's trying to tag him out, it's just hilarious.
Yes, I did think, apparently Vulcans don't know how to run. Because he kind of, I don't know how to even describe his little, it's like a trot. He kind of trots around, Rom, is it? No, Nog. Rom.
It's Nog, sorry. Yeah,
Nog is, going. So that's, I mean, if you know nothing else about this episode, this is the episode where you get to see them play baseball and they're having fun. And you get to see Odo be the umpire, which I think is maybe one of my two favorite parts, of kind of, you know, Odo doesn't have a lot to do in this episode, but his umpiring is a lot of fun. Worf also doesn't have a lot to do in this episode, but he has a couple of great lines. Death to the opposition being one of my favorite Deep Space Nine quotes ever.
I wanted to open the show with that, but I was like, I don't know if people are going to recognize it.
And then when Sisko sits them all down to tell them, okay, we've been challenged by the Vulcans, of a game of, you know, skill and intrigue and all this stuff. And Worf says, we will destroy them.
There's another one where Nog's trying to tag out the Vulcan who ran back to the thing. Worf just yells, hunt him down and kill him.
Yes.
And the chief's like, just tag him down.
That's right. We're just touch it with the ball. We're on the same side, remember?
Yeah. Michael Dorn has he's got good comedy chops.
He does. He has, he plays it. He has good timing and he has good inflection.
There's good scenes with him and Nog. So at the beginning, I guess we should probably go a little bit more linearly, but they are, after Sisko tells them what's up, they all kind of break into study groups and try to teach each other what the actual rules of baseball are. And at one point, I think it's Nog and Worf along with, Kira?
I think Kira, they're kind of huddled around pads trying to figure out.
Yeah, exactly. In ops, I think. And she keeps, like, talking about rules. And Nog and Worf just keep giving each other these looks of, like, what is this alien stuff? Like, I don't understand it. And it's so nice to see those two get along so well that they're communicating without even talking. There's just nice little character moments that pay off in this episode. And it makes it kind of hard to describe and talk about.
Yes.
Because like you're talking about Odo being the umpire, and you just see him at one point in his office practicing you're safe, and there's no dialogue except Kira just walks by and just gets a smile on her face watching him do it, and it's super endearing.
Yes, and there's this whole Rom kind of, I hesitate to call it a plot, but part where, you know, he wants to really be part of the team because he's Rom, and he wants to, he's found, you know, Nog tells him that Jake and Sisko bond by playing catch, so he wants to bond with Nog because he hasn't seen him in so long. He really wants to be part of the team and help out, but, you know, surprisingly, Nog is terrible at baseball. And why wouldn't he be? Yeah,
exactly. They all are, kind of. I mean, like, Worf isn't as good as you'd think he might be.
Right, because they've never played this game ever, because it's been what I think they say at some episode, like a couple hundred years since baseball's even been played by humans. So this is like a super obscure sport, even among humans, so let alone other races, which makes it
surprising. Do you remember who the greatest player ever was?
I want to say Buckaroo Banzai, but that's not right.
It's very close. Buck Bakai.
There you go. I remember that episode because I talked about it a couple of episodes of Random Trek ago with what's his face, the guy who can turn straw into gold.
Rumpelstiltskin.
There you go.
I thought
He's not.
I thought for a second you were going to forget the name of your guest, but remember Buck Bakai, and I'm like, geez, man.
That's, you know,
some cold these, stuff.
These characters are so real. So yeah, this is an obscure game. None of them should be good at it, but some of them have more innate athletic ability than others.
Yeah,
and I certainly, when I was growing up, I'm an American, so you're kind of forced to play baseball when you're a kid. Although I guess that's changing now. You might be forced to play soccer now. I don't know, or football for non-American listeners, because I think that's very popular. So I played t-ball in a t-ball league. Which, for people who aren't familiar, I don't know if t-ball is a thing outside of America, but it's you don't. There's no pitcher. There's a stick that they put the ball on, and then you hit it off of that ball, and then kids, it's all run around. So there is not really a point to the story, but I'm going to tell it. So, and my mother was the coach of the t-ball thing. So you would think that I would get a little preferential treatment here. Mm. But it turns out, much like Rom, I am really bad at baseball. Yeah. And so I mentioned in t-ball, no one throws the ball for the pitch. It's just kind of there. So I was the pitcher for my t-ball team, which meant I didn't do anything. My mother was very wise. Let's take a moment to pause and thank our sponsor for this episode, Casper. That's right. Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. Supportive memory foams create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. You listening, can try Casper for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it. Some of it sleeping. Free shipping and returns to the United States and Canada. Sorry, everywhere else. With over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars, it's quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. And you know how picky the internet is. Now you can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/trek and using an offer code. Well, not just any offer code, but this offer code, TREK, T-R-E-K. Terms and conditions apply. Our thanks to Casper for sponsoring Random Trek. And now back to the show.
So what does that mean? Like if the ball just goes really short?
Then I have to run up and pick it. Like if you bunt, see, I would have to run in and get it. But I didn't do that very often because very bad at baseball.
That's got to be embarrassing when you're the useless guy, but you're also right in the middle.
Like, yes, everyone can see you. You can't hide in left field. It was good. So I don't have, and I, as I said earlier, I don't really like baseball. I do try to go to a baseball game in a major league ballpark every once in a while because it's fun just to go.
Yeah, that's my experience too. I enjoy going to the ballpark.
But the game itself I find quite boring.
Sure.
But that's what this episode I like, not because it has baseball, although I'm sure if you were just watching it because you wanted to watch a game of baseball, this would be a quite frustrating experience. but because the characters and the interaction, it's a lot of fun. But I don't know how I got on this tangent. Oh, because I was talking about Rom and how he has no athletic ability.
Yeah.
But he's trying, he has a lot of heart, right? Sisko makes this big speech about how, you know, baseball isn't a game. It's not about athleticism, because if it were only about athleticism, then we should just give up, right? Because the Vulcans are faster than us. They're stronger than us. They're going to win if you base it on that. But no, baseball's about heart. You got to have heart. And Rom has a lot of heart.
Interesting thing in there. He basically said Worf and Bashir are equal to Vulcans.
Yes, as strong as Vulcans. And Bashir.
And in another thing, he said that Vulcans are three times as strong as an average person.
Mm-hmm. Average human.
Average human, yeah. Sorry.
don't be specious.
Human-centric with my word person. <That's right>. There. I'm turning into Solok.
Oh, man.
Anyway, but that makes Worf real strong.
He's a strong person.
Yeah.
Klingons Klingons, the Klingon homeworld must also have high gravity, or just Klingons work out a lot. I don't know. Yeah,
double whammy. Anyway.
Now, this is an interesting thing. I wonder, since Solok's ship is all Vulcan, do they keep the gravity at Vulcan normal gravity?
Oh, interesting.
Because mm-hmm. it's much higher than Earth gravity, so...
Yes, we know that from the science of TOS.
That's right. Yeah. so I wonder if the... it doesn't matter, but it just popped into my head. So Rom plays a kind of a small but critical role, right? Because he is not very good, and they play up the fact that he's not very good.
Yeah.
And
the arc is Sisko getting way too into the game.
Yes, he's super into it. He's like, we've got to win, we've got to win, we've got to win. And then we find out why he's obsessed with it, right? Because Solok beat him in a wrestling match, but then that wasn't the real problem. The problem was then that Solok basically gloats for 20 years about it and writes several academic papers about it.
Yeah. Solok needs a way to deal with his emotions that aren't being a jerk to people.
Yes, Solok needs to take up a hobby of some sort. He should play that game that Tuvok likes to play, maybe, or meditate in his 70s decorated quarters like Spock. I don't know. He needs something. Yeah. But he has chosen his pastime is tormenting Benjamin Sisko through kind of passive-aggressive academic papers that one can only assume when it is published, Solok forwards it to Benjamin Sisko to make sure that Sisko has read it.
Of course it does, yeah.
And he probably forwards it in Vulcan, so then Sisko has to, and makes it like an official Starfleet communication, so Sisko has to translate it to read it just in case.
And he's probably like really, like he's just passive-aggressive about having read receipts turned on.
Yes, he's the kind of guy that would have read receipts on. Oh, Solok, we don't like you. But yeah, so Sisko's like, we gotta win. Everybody, you know, is we have 2 weeks to beat these Vulcans. And Rom just isn't improving. And basically, Sisko kicks him off the team. And everybody's like, WTF, man. I thought we were supposed to have heart and have fun. And the whole team was gonna walk off in solidarity. After Sisko leaves, though. It's nobody protests when Sisko throws Rom off the team. But afterwards at Bork's, they all are like, ooh, we think that's totally inappropriate, and we're going to quit.
Yeah, solidarity. I think there was a bit of like, he is the captain.
It's true, and so they were a bit shocked.
So in stress situation, they're shocked. They're like, because Nog starts complaining to him about like, come on, let my dad play. And he's like, well, I wasn't talking to you, Ensign.
Yes.
And once you, like, he's a jerk. Once you start pulling rank when you're in the off hours hanging out with your buddies, that's not cool.
Yeah, it muddles the situation because you're like, now
I'm an ensign.
Like, that's right. Yeah, chain of command is invoked again, so I guess I can't argue. But so everybody's like, Rom, we're going to quit. And Rom's like, no, you guys have to stay the course. I want to see you guys win. I want to support you, so I will be in the stands, although he doesn't know what the stands are called because he knows nothing about baseball, because why would he?
But I really like Rom. I actually really like Leeta, too. Who they do sex bomb up a bit, but they have more of an excuse for it. That she's a Dabo girl.
She's a Dabo girl. That's kind of what they do.
Yeah. And Quark is always insulting her for it. But consistently throughout the series, she's actually pretty awesome.
Yeah, and she doesn't take a lot of his guff.
Pretty sure she's broken him out of jail. Like, she's been...
I think so.
Like, when during the occupation stuff, she does useful stuff. Like, she's pretty good.
And Leeta and Rom are a great couple together.
Oh, they're amazing. I love the way they support each other. Super cute.
That's right. And Leeta's like, I'm totally not going to play because I'll support you. And, you know, Rom's like, no, you should play too. You're good at it. You should play. And I can watch. I'm good at supporting. And of course, we get several scenes seeing Rom do the Ferengi applause, which
I'm sure that they must have just made that up.
Well,
have we seen that before?
They've made everything up.
I thought you were about to say, I hate to bring it to you, but they did just make that up.
I was going
to
say, it's all made up, guy.
One thing that stuck out to me and I made a note was we listened to an anthem.
Yes, I assume it's the United Federation of Planets anthem.
I think that may be the one and only time we've ever heard that.
And it may just be me projecting, but it kind of felt like that anthem was too long.
Guess what? Me too. That is accurately baseball.
That is true. The national anthem does go on for a long time. At least it's instrumental, so you don't have... at least, you know, the national anthem of America, the United States, is notoriously a difficult song to sing. Yeah. And they sing it for baseball games and other sporting games. And they get people who don't sing often to sing it just because it's kind of a nice thing to let people do. But it's a hard song to sing. And it just sounds horrible if you are not a professional singer.
Yeah. Also, man, I would hate to have to listen to that Federation version of that. Like, because it would have to follow that rule of like one or two things from actual history plus one thing that hasn't happened yet.
Yes.
In our timeline. Like, it would be the most convoluted, annoying. It would frustrate me to no end.
Yes. So I'm glad it was a good choice to. Yeah. It was a nice nod to the tradition, but a good choice to not have words to the anthem, whatever anthem it was.
Yeah. Also, headcanon, because the Federation has so many cultures and languages, they don't have any words.
Oh, but they have a universal translator, so
yeah,
it doesn't
they
matter.
Because they don't codify it in any one thing. It's just here's just the music.
I wonder how many committees it took to come up with an anthem that could cover so many planets and cultures, though.
It turns out they took all of their sensitivity lawyers, Starfleet lawyers, and they put them on that problem, and nobody took a look at Solok's stupid crew. Right.
They were all busy. We cannot offend anyone with this anthem. Yeah. Sure, just a whole Vulcan crew.
Yeah, that seems fine. Ship full of Vulcan racists. Perfect.
That's cool. Problem solves itself. They leave. They're on a ship. It's fine. We'll send them into combat.
Oh, no. That's too harsh. Don't do that.
No, they're good officers, and they're loyal to the Federation. I mean no offense, crew of Solok's ship, if you're listening.
T'Cumbra.
Yes, the T'Cumbra, which is apparently a Vulcan name, I guess.
It's got a T with an apostrophe in front of it. So.
That's what leads me to believe it's either Klingon or Vulcan, but it's a Vulcan ship, so I imagine it's named after some Vulcan thing.
Of course it is.
Tells me it's
like,
a nebula.
What, you can't just have like the USS Hoard or something? It's got to... Anyway.
So this is the arc, you know, Sisko kicks him off, Rom kicks Rom off. Rom has a lot of heart. Everybody's shocked. But then we find out why, because what's-his-face? He has Cassie. He's pulled some strings to get Cassidy to come back in a couple of good scenes, I think. Cassidy Yates is his lady friend.
Yeah, I love Penny Johnson. She's great.
Yeah, and she brings a whole a different energy to Deep Space Nine, which I like.
Yep, me too.
And she kind of humanizes Sisko, because Sisko can be a little bit troubled and distant. So she's great. And I like the scene where she's like, he says, "Oh, I think I know someone," and I have to pull some strings. And then she, you know, he meets her at the airlock with the bouquet of flowers that he uses as a bat before she comes through, which I thought was great. He's like, "Oh, are you staying for long?" And she's like, "Well, Seth, for some reason, my next three jobs were reassigned, so I guess so." And he's like, "That's weird." And you totally know he did that.
Yeah, kind of a jerk.
That is a kind of a jerk move, but he needs her for his baseball team.
Yeah, that's anyway.
And she's really good, and so she helps. Then she tells everybody the story, and they're like, "Oh, that's why he's being so crazy. We have to win, but we can't tell him we know because he doesn't want us to know for whatever reason." And this is kind of the journey of Sisko.
Well, it's kind of shameful, right? Like,
I guess
you as a captain don't want your team to know that you're like you've got this weird grudge with it.
With another captain. You should be
these for like forever ago, and it's silly. So.
That's true. Both of these captains are being quite immature, so
they
shouldn't be. But then, you know, through the course of the game that's going very, very poorly, the Vulcans are just crushing the non-Vulcans because they're faster and stronger. And it seems like having heart doesn't really matter in winning a baseball game. But then in a funny scene, Sisko gets ejected by Odo, which I enjoyed. Yeah. But then he, you know, he's kind of sulking in the stands for a few innings. And then it occurs to him that they're not going to win. And that's not the whole point of baseball, right? That's not why you do it. You're just having fun. He realizes.
And it occurs to him after seeing Nog do this crazy play where the Vulcan didn't touch the home plate and then he runs back. And he's just excited about like how stupid that whole thing was. And he sees that Rom is up there with him, also super excited and really proud of his son. And Sisko just breaks down and he's like, "You know what? I'm being an idiot." Like, Rom says to him, "It looks like a lot of fun."
Yes. And you think, "Oh, Rom, why won't Sisko let Rom play?"
Yeah. And then Sisko's like, "Come on, Rom.
Which it's kind of, I mean, it's a nice moment. It is also undercut by the fact that it's clear they're going to lose anyway. So you might as well let Rom try.
Yeah, a little bit of that. I didn't really think of it like that. But yeah, I don't know. I've seen it like 30 times. So.
I think that's a little, that's not what they're going for. But there is that kind of, you know, they're going to lose anyway. So let Rom in. Although Rom is, so Rom is up to bat. And the only point that they win or they get is because of Rom bunting by accident, basically, and letting Nog go run home.
Yeah, he does a sacrifice play for his son to score a point.
That's right. It's all Ferengi, all the time.
Yeah,
and they get a point. Everybody's happy. Everybody rushes the field. Well, not everybody, but the Niners rush the field. Solok is upset and tells Odo it's inappropriate and the game's not over and they should, you know, stop it. And Odo turns his back and Solok grabs his shoulder to kind of get his attention, forgetting the rule that you're never supposed to touch the Empire, which is what got Sisko ejected. And you could tell that Odo, and the perfect Empire, right? Because Odo is going to follow the rules no matter what.
Yeah.
But you can tell he really enjoyed ejecting Solok for the same rule violation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure it turned his back for a reason.
Yes.
Yeah. And awesome, Solok, stupid racist Vulcan, let his emotions get the better of him there.
He did. That's, and in another scene, he also does right afterwards, right? When they're all celebrating because they, you know, finally Sisko has broken out of his funk and he realizes it should be just fun. And, you know, there are no losers in a game of baseball because everybody's had fun, which is not logical, right? And so Solok is like, why are you celebrating? And they basically mock him, which isn't very nice, but he's not very nice, so we don't care. And it is clear that they've gotten under his Vulcan skin, and he leaves because he doesn't want to lower himself to their level.
And they all have the ball that they signed, which somehow miraculously can survive outside of a holo suite.
<That's> but best not to think about these kinds of things.
And they've signed it, and we close with the ball being thrown up in the air, and we see everybody's signatures. And cut to black. Which and Worf's is hilarious. Like, all of the signatures are pretty funny, actually. If you look at them, like, they're kind of in character, and it's pretty funny. Yeah,
I had that same reaction. And that is a much better ending then, because there was a moment where I thought, are they going to end this on a free stream? Because everybody's laughing, like, inappropriately, exuberantly, and I thought, don't end on a laugh
like
free stream.
Like an 80s sitcom laughing. Yeah.
Don't do it. And they didn't. They end on the baseball, which I think is a much better ending.
Yeah, I thought so too.
And so, speaking of the holodeck, my wife, when they were practicing, my wife was like, don't you think they would all have the same uniform at this point?
I thought the same thing. And it's the first time I thought it after seeing this episode a million times. Why? And I think they do it so that you can, like, visibly, the like game day just looks different than
yes, and I think they had to earn their uniforms, and so
you have some headcanon,
is that they just were able to pick whatever they wanted to wear from baseball paraphernalia, but
maybe
then they get their uniforms. They probably cut a scene where Sisko gives everyone their uniforms.
Yeah, I could see that, and it does seem like something Sisko would do. Like, no, I'm not giving you
the uniform. That's right. You have to earn this uniform. You're not on the team yet. You don't get a uniform. Although the thing that did bother me, and I don't know why it bothered me, is that all their pre-game kind of, I guess, warm-up outfits, or I don't know what you call them. They probably have a name in baseball. They all have their names on them, which is fine. That didn't bother me. But they all have them on different sides of the shirt. I'm like, it should really be on one side or the other people. Get it together.
I didn't notice that. Oh, well. That's costume department. That's screwing everything up.
And maybe this could be one of those things where it means something, but I don't know what it means.
Maybe,
But this
actually,
episode,
maybe that is a baseball thing. Who knows?
Maybe it is. I don't know. If you're left-handed or right-handed, I don't know. Because that's a thing in baseball, too, I think. This people
being,
who know,
being left and right-handed? Yeah, that turns out, like in life, that is
like
a factor.
Everything else, yes. But there are, you know, left-handed pitchers, I think.
No,
are,
it is. There's more. You have different strategies.
See?
Putting,
I know a little bit about baseball. Very, very little bit about baseball. I know a whole lot more about Star Trek, though. But this episode is just a silly episode, but it's fun. and it has some touching moments. Like I was really Rom is so much of an earnest and open character who is totally not like any other Ferengi and kind of a sad sack, but yet he's not really a sad sack because he's kind of happy and he knows that he's not great at stuff, but he is, he's just so earnest and he tries so hard.
Yeah. He's not like any other character in Star Trek. I cannot think of an analog for him. Like Barclay. No.
Barclay's neurotic,
insecure, but
he's still like, good at what he's doing, what he does.
Yeah.
And he doesn't, he's not as warm and fuzzy as Rom. Like you feel like you would want to tell Rom your troubles.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want
to
tell.
And
Barclay
he would do his best to help you, probably screwing it up somehow.
Right, probably make it worse. But you couldn't be mad at him because you knew he was trying really hard to help you.
Yeah, he does have technical jobs. He's like
that
competent.
Is smart. He is good at
fixing stuff.
Kind of an engineer.
Yeah,
but
doesn't he? He figures out how they're going to take down the land mines in front of the wormhole.
Oh yeah,
works,
he does.
Works to stop it. Like he does some Star Trek Star Fleet level.
Yes.
Hacking at stuff, you know?
And he wasn't allowed to be an engineer, I think, because obviously he's a Ferengi, so he's supposed to be in business.
Yeah.
And that's why he fights so hard to let Nog be in Starfleet. Which is another good attribute for Rom. So we like you, Rom. And I think there's a lot of... Rom is really good in this episode.
I think he's great. I like Chief O'Brien, but he doesn't really do much in this episode.
But he makes gum. I love that he makes
gum with whiskey flavored gum.
Yes, which is
great. When Sisko gets ejected, he becomes the coach, which just makes the most sense to me.
Well,
like Worf is gonna just be forget it.
Worf is like, let's go beat them up with these. We have bats. Let's beat them up.
The chief has good command ability without going so far as to be like. I know it's just a game, and I kind of don't care about this.
And there's the great moment where, you know, Chief O'Brien, Sisko's basically like, Julian says, well, you know what that means? You're in charge, O'Brien. And you see that moment of like, oh, crap, I don't know anything about baseball. But then he switches into, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm in charge. And then he assigns people field positions, and it's great.
Yeah, he's good. He's honestly one of my favorite characters from either TNG or... DS9.
And of course, in this episode, he gets injured. And so poor O'Brien, he can't catch a break. He always gets injured.
I think it's always the same arm from kayaking.
It's the kayaking. It's exactly.
It's always the one arm.
Too much kayaking and too many throwing darts. He puts strain on that, that rotator cuff. When will you learn, O'Brien?
Yeah. I get a feeling he works it out. Drinking a few pints every now and then, too.
I think that's true. A couple pints of Synthahol. Although I doubt Quark sells Synthahol. This episode, overall, thumbs up, thumbs down, 5 baseballs, 9 innings out of 10. I don't know. A baseball analogy I can't do, but...
Yeah, I don't know baseball either. They had 10 innings on the board, but it only goes to 9s. But they've got one extra inning if you anyway. Whatever.
Just in case.
I don't know. 3 Worfs, a Nog, and a big cup of Bashir. It's a hearty meal. It's a hearty meal is what
I'm
trying to say.
It's filling. It's good.
Yeah. I liked it. I really do like it. Again, it's contextual. If you don't like these characters, I would not tell you to just watch this episode.
Oh, no.
That would be bad. But you need to watch this episode in the context of this is very soon after Sisko's been in a loony bin. It's like 2-3 episodes after that all that, you know, when he's digging up the prophecy orbs and he's basically gone insane and he comes back from that. So that explains why he's a little bit on edge. Episode 8 of this season is the siege of Wolf 359, like some other one, you know, where they're all pinned down with the communication relay and they're getting assaulted by the Jemadar and Nog gets his leg blown off.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit dark. And that's just at the front end of the season. Second end it's obviously the end of the show, but there's a lot of dark stuff going on. So it's nice to...
It's nice to have a little break.
Yeah. And sunshine on DS9, that's nice.
Yes, it's true. This is probably the most light we've ever seen.
Yeah, and people laughing and having fun. And I liked it. I did like it.
Yes, and this is not as... I mean, there are many throwaway episodes of Star Trek that have kind of a goofy theme. You know, let's put the characters in an unfamiliar setting and watch. Ha ha, it's fun. Yeah. But this one has that kind of appeal, but it also has a lot of good character moments.
And kind of develops, I feel, the characters. It's valuable. And it's really hard to, I mean, talking about it is makes no sense because it has to do with like the acting that they give mm-hmm. against each other. It's how much Rene Aubergeon, however you pronounce it, mm-hmm. is enjoying barking out his his lines as the umpire.
Yes.
It's just everything. Everything's just fun.
Yes, and this is, I totally agree with you. That this is like, if you've never seen an episode of Deep Space Nine, this is not the episode to watch because it will make no sense and you don't have that relationship with the characters, so it's not as much fun. But if you like Deep Space Nine, or specifically like the Deep Space Nine characters, this is a great episode to watch. Well, Guy, thank you so much for coming on yet again and discussing Star Trek with me.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure. Good luck with everything, and I'm looking forward to hearing more episodes.